A werewolf romance written by Georgina Anderson. Prologue. The sound of breaking. I was 6 years old when the fever took my legs. 6 years old when I learned that the world measures your worth by what you can do, not who you are. 6 years old when I discovered that some prisons don't have bars. They have wheels. My name is Sarah Whitlock, and this is the story of how I went from the girl they pitied to the woman they feared. From the cripple in the corner to the seer who saw everything. But let me take you back to the beginning. To the moment my old life ended and my new one, the one that mattered, began in silence and fever dreams. Chapter 1. The girl in the chair. The mockery started small, whispers behind hands, eyes sliding away when I rolled past. The peculiar silence that falls when someone unwanted enters a room. I was 17 now, 11 years after the fever. 11 years of watching my younger sister Celeste blossom into everything I should have been. Graceful, strong, desired. 11 years of being Thornbrook Pack's afterthought. The Omega who couldn't even perform basic Omega duties because I couldn't stand for hours in the kitchens or kneel to scrub floors. Sarah, move. Celeste's voice cut through my thoughts. She stood in the doorway of our shared room, already dressed for the harvest moon gathering. Her dress was deep green, cut to emphasize her figure. Her hair cascaded in perfect waves. She looked like an Omega should look, decorative, desirable, complete. I looked down at myself, thin frame, pale skin from too many hours indoors. Legs that hadn't walked in 11 years, tucked uselessly in my wheelchair. I said, move. Celeste's tone sharpened. I need the mirror. There's a mirror in the bathroom. The light's better here. God, Sarah? Why do you always have to make things difficult? I wheeled backward, angling toward the corner. The same corner I always occupied. My spot. The place where I could be out of the way, unseen. Almost forgotten. Celeste swept past me, trailing perfume and impatience. She adjusted her dress in the mirror, tilting her head to examine her reflection. Are you coming to the gathering? I wasn't planning to. Good. She met my eyes in the mirror. It's cruel, I know, but Sarah, you make people uncomfortable. The way you just sit there, watching. It's unsettling. Watching. That's all I did anymore. Watch and see, and remember. Mother wants you to stay in tonight anyway, Celeste continued, applying lip color with practiced precision. She's worried you'll embarrass us. You know how you get. How do I get? Intense. You stare at people like you can see through them. It creeps the alphas out. She turned, finally looking at me directly. For a moment, something flickered in her expression. Guilt, maybe. Or pity. I hated pity more than mockery. I'll stay in, I said quietly. Have fun. She left in a cloud of perfume and relief. I sat in my corner, listening to the sounds of the pack house coming alive. Music drifting up from the great hall. Laughter. The thunder of feet on stairs as people rushed to prepare for the night's festivities. I closed my eyes and let myself drift into that other place. The place I'd discovered 3 years ago, quite by accident. The place that made me something more than the crippled Omega everyone pitied. The place where I could see. Chapter 2. The First Vision. It had started with headaches. Blinding, nauseating headaches that left me shaking and disoriented. The pack healer, Elder Mira, said it was stress. Said I needed to accept my limitations, stop fighting against my fate. But the headaches weren't stress. They were the beginning of something else entirely. The first real vision came on a Tuesday. Strange how the worst days always seem to be Tuesdays. I was alone in the library, my refuge, the place where no one needed me to be anything other than quiet. I was reading about the old Luna Queens when the world suddenly tilted. The library dissolved. In its place, a forest clearing, moonlight streaming through bare branches. A woman stood in the center, her back to me, She wore white robes that glowed silver in the lunar light. When she turned, I gasped. Her eyes were solid white. No pupils, no iris, just glowing, luminous white. "Finally," she said, and her voice echoed like it was coming from everywhere at once. "I've been calling you for months, little seer. Why do you resist?" I'm not... The words stuck in my throat. "You are." She moved closer, and I realized she was floating, her feet not quite touching the ground. "You are a seer, Sarah Whitlock, descended from my line, born with the gift of sight beyond sight. The fever didn't take your legs, child. It awakened your true vision." "Who are you?" "I am Luna Serafina, the first seer, the one who guided Queen Morrigan to unite the packs 500 years ago. And you," she reached out, her hand passing through my wheelchair's armrest like smoke, "you are my successor, my legacy, the seer this generation desperately needs but doesn't know to look for." "I'm nobody," I whispered. "I'm just a crippled Omega everyone mocks." Her smile was gentle but knowing. "Yes, I'm aware. Do you know why you see what others don't, Sarah?" I shook my head. "Because you sit still. Because you watch. Because while others are busy doing, you are being. In the stillness, in the watching, you've developed the sight. The ability to see not just what is, but what was, and what could be." "I don't understand." "You will." She began to fade. "The visions will come stronger now. Don't fight them. Don't fear them. They are your gift, your purpose. And soon, very soon, someone will need what only you can see." "Wait! How do I..." But she was gone. I snapped back to the library, gasping, my hands white-knuckled on my wheelchair's armrests. The book I'd been reading had fallen to the floor. I looked at my hands. They were shaking. That was 3 years ago. Since then, the visions had come regularly. Not constantly. I couldn't control them. Couldn't summon them at will. But they came. Flashes of future. Echoes of past. Glimpses of truth hidden beneath surfaces. I learned to recognize the signs. A pressure behind my eyes. A chill down my spine. The way sounds became muffled like I was underwater. I learned to hide the visions when they came in public, to let my eyes glaze over so people thought I was just daydreaming, just the strange, crippled girl lost in her own thoughts. I learned to watch and see and say nothing, because who would believe me? I was nobody. The Omega who couldn't even perform basic Omega tasks, the girl in the chair who made people uncomfortable. If I told them I had visions, they'd say the isolation had driven me mad. So I stayed quiet. I watched, I saw, and I waited. Chapter 3, The Alpha's Arrival. The gathering was in full swing when the vision hit. I was in my room, supposedly reading, when the pressure began behind my eyes. I set down my book carefully, gripping my wheelchair's armrests as the world tilted and reformed. The great hall, but different. Wrong. Fire consuming the curtains. Smoke filling the air. People screaming. Running. And in the center of the chaos, a man. No, not just a man. An alpha. I could feel his power even in the vision, could sense the barely controlled violence radiating from him. He was laughing. Thornbrook Pack was burning, and he was laughing. Then his eyes found mine across the distance, across time, across the boundary between vision and reality. They were gold. Pure, molten gold. "Hello, little seer," he said and smiled. "I've been looking for you." I slammed back into my body, gasping. My hands were shaking. My heart hammered against my ribs. Downstairs, the music stopped. A voice cut through the sudden silence, deep, commanding, carrying easily through the pack house. "I am Kale Blackthorn, Alpha of the Northern Territory. I come seeking sanctuary for the night. By pack law, I claim guest right." Northern Territory, the wild lands, the place where alphas were more beast than man, where power was the only law that mattered. What was a Northern Alpha doing here? Curiosity won over caution. I wheeled to my door, opening it a crack to listen. My mother's voice, tight with forced hospitality. "Of course, Alpha Blackthorn. Thornbrook honors the old laws. You're welcome in our home." How generous. His voice was smooth, cultured, nothing like the savage laughter from my vision. "I hope my pack won't be too much of an imposition. There are 30 of us." 30. Gods. "Your entire pack?" My father now, Alpha Marcus, trying to keep the alarm from his voice. "We travel together. I don't trust these southern territories. Too soft. Too willing to smile while holding a knife behind their backs." Silence. The insult hung in the air. "Of course," my father said finally. "We'll prepare accommodations. Please join our Harvest Moon celebration. Food and drink are plentiful." How could I refuse? Footsteps. Many footsteps. The Northern Pack entering our home. I should have closed my door, should have stayed hidden like I always did. But something pulled me forward. Some instinct deeper than caution. I wheeled into the hallway, positioning myself where I could see down to the entrance hall. They were magnificent and terrifying in equal measure. The Northern Pack. All of them tall, muscular, moving with a predator's grace. They wore leather and fur, their clothes practical rather than decorative. Many had visible scars. All of them looked like they could kill without hesitation. And at their center, Kale Blackthorn. He was younger than I'd expected. Mid-20s, maybe. Tall, broad-shouldered, with black hair pulled back in a warrior's knot. His face was sharp-featured, handsome in a harsh way. He wore authority like a second skin. Then he looked up. His eyes found mine instantly, unerringly, like he'd known exactly where I was. Gold. Pure, molten gold. The same eyes from my vision. For a heartbeat, the world narrowed to just us. Him at the bottom of the stairs, me at the top in my wheelchair. His expression shifted. Surprise, recognition, something else I couldn't name. "Who?" he said quietly, but his voice carried perfectly in the sudden hush. "Is that?" My mother appeared at the base of the stairs, her face flushing with embarrassment. That's just Sarah. Our older daughter. She hesitated, and I knew what she was trying not to say. Crippled. Damaged. Nothing important. "She's unwell," my mother finished. "She shouldn't be out of her room. Sarah, go back." "No." Kyle's voice cracked like a whip. "Let her stay." He moved toward the stairs. His pack parted for him automatically, a choreography of deference. My heart hammered. Every instinct screamed at me to flee, to wheel back to my room and lock the door. But I couldn't move. Couldn't look away. He climbed the stairs slowly, his eyes never leaving mine. When he reached the top, he stood there for a moment studying me with an intensity that should have been uncomfortable, but somehow wasn't. "What's your name?" he asked quietly. "Sarah. Sarah Whitlock." "Sarah." He said it like he was tasting it, testing how it felt in his mouth. "How old are you?" 17. "And your designation?" "Omega." Something flickered in his expression. "How long have you been in the chair?" "Direct." No dancing around it, no polite pretending not to notice. I liked that. 11 years. Fever when I was 6. "Can you shift?" "No." "But you're Wolfborn?" "Yes." He crouched, bringing himself to eye level with me. This close, I could see the scars on his hands, the calluses. A warrior's hands. A killer's hands. "Are you the one who's been watching me?" he asked softly. My breath caught. "What?" "In my dreams. In the space between sleep and waking. Someone's been watching me for months. Silver eyes. Always watching. Never speaking." His head tilted. "Is it you, Sarah Whitlock?" The visions. Gods, he'd felt the visions. I don't know what you mean, I lied. His smile was slow, dangerous. Yes, you do. Kyle, one of his packmates, a tall woman with a scarred face, appeared at the bottom of the stairs. We're needed in the hall. Territory discussion. He stood, but his eyes stayed on mine. We'll talk later, little Omega. You and I have much to discuss. Then he was gone, descending the stairs three at a time, rejoining his pack. I sat there trembling, my mind racing. He'd felt the visions. Somehow, impossibly, he'd felt me seeing him. And that meant everything had just changed. Chapter 4. The Seer's Burden. I didn't go to dinner. Instead, I stayed in my room, trying to process what had happened, trying to understand how Kale Blackthorne had known about the visions. The answer came at midnight, delivered not by logic, but by Luna Serafina herself. The vision took me without warning. One moment I was sitting by my window, the next I was standing, in that moonlit clearing again. Luna Serafina stood before me, her white eyes glowing. He is sensitive, she said without preamble. Most alphas are, if they're powerful enough. Their instincts attune them to hidden threats, hidden truths. When you see someone, Sarah, you touch their soul. Even if they don't consciously recognize it, their wolf does. It feels you watching. I didn't mean to. I know. Your gift is still raw, unrefined. You don't yet know how to see without being felt. She moved closer. The Alpha Kale is more sensitive than most, more powerful, more attuned to the spiritual realm. That's why he's been dreaming of you. What does he want? The same thing everyone wants when they encounter a seer child. Answers. Her expression grew serious. Your vision of fire. It's true. Thornbrook will burn 3 days from now if you don't intervene. My stomach dropped. 3 days? But how? Who? A rival pack. They've been planning it for months, waiting for the harvest celebration when defenses are down. She gestured, and the air shimmered. Images appeared. Wolves in the darkness, surrounding the pack house. Fire arrows. Screams. But there's a traitor, Serafina continued. Someone inside Thornbrook who will open the gates. Someone you trust. Who? That you must see for yourself. I can show you possibilities, Sarah. But you must look deeper to find certainty. I don't know how. Yes, you do. Her voice was gentle but firm. You've been preparing for this your whole life. Every hour spent watching, observing, learning to read people. It wasn't wasted. You are a seer, not just of visions, but of truth. You see what people hide. You see their masks and the faces beneath. But no one listens to me. I'm just the crippled Omega everyone mocks. She floated closer until we were face to face. Do you know why the goddess takes the legs of her seers, Sarah? I shook my head. Because a seer must be still, must be forced to watch rather than act, must develop sight instead of strength. Your wheelchair isn't a prison, child. It's your throne. From it, you see what others miss. From it, you will save your pack, if you're brave enough. But how? No one will believe me. No, she agreed. No one will believe you, except one person. She smiled. The Alpha whose dreams you've haunted. Kale Blackthorne is here for a reason, Sarah. Not for sanctuary. For you. For me? The Northern Territory has been having visions, too. Prophetic dreams. Their shamans have seen a coming war. A great darkness that will consume all the packs unless someone stops it. And in every vision, there's a girl in a wheelchair. A seer. The key to everything. My heart hammered. I'm not. I can't be. You are. You can. And you will. Serafina began to fade. Trust the Alpha, Sarah. He came seeking you, even if he doesn't fully understand why yet. Together you might be able to stop what's coming. And if I fail? Then Thornbrook burns. And after Thornbrook, every other pack in the territory. The darkness is coming, child. The question is whether you'll face it from your corner, silent and safe, or whether you'll finally accept what you are and fight. She vanished. I woke in my chair, gasping, my hands white-knuckled on the armrests. 3 days. I had 3 days to figure out who the traitor was and convince someone, anyone, to believe me. I looked at my reflection in the window. Pale face, silver eyes, thin frame in a wheelchair. The crippled Omega everyone mocked. The seer no one knew existed. For the first time in 11 years, I felt something other than resignation. I felt purpose. Chapter 5. The Alpha's Suspicion. I found Kyle on the training grounds the next morning. He was sparring with 3 of his packmates simultaneously, moving with a fluid grace that made violence look like dancing. He wore no shirt, and his skin was a map of scars, evidence of a life lived on the edge of survival. He was magnificent and terrifying. And I needed his help. I wheeled to the edge of the training ground, waiting. Several Thornbrook wolves noticed me, their conversations dying as they stared. I was used to it, the awkward silence, the pitying glances, the way people suddenly found reasons to be elsewhere. But Kale's pack was different. They noticed me, yes, but their gazes were assessing, not pitying. Like they were measuring threat level, not feeling sorry for me. I liked that better. Kale finished his match, pinning all 3 opponents simultaneously. He rose, breathing hard but not winded, and grabbed a towel. His eyes found mine immediately. He crossed the training ground in long strides. "Little Omega," he said, and something in his tone made it sound like an endearment rather than a diminishment. "You're up early." "I need to talk to you." "So talk." I glanced at the watching wolves, both his pack and mine. Privately. His eyebrow arched, then he gestured to his second, the scarred woman from last night. "Tessa, clear the grounds. Alpha, now." She hesitated, then barked orders. Within 2 minutes, the training ground was empty, except for Kale and me. He crouched to my eye level again, studying my face. "You're afraid. Not of me, of something else. What did you see, Sarah?" "Straight to it. No pretense, no small talk." "How did you know that you're a seer?" His smile was grim. "Our shamans described you perfectly. Silver eyes, wheelchair. 17 years old. Lives in Thornbrook Pack. When I heard about this place during my travels south, I knew I had to come." "Your shamans see me?" "See you, dream of you, have prophetic visions about you. For 6 months, Sarah. You've been haunting our spiritual leaders. They said I'd find the key to stopping the coming darkness here. I didn't expect the key to be a teenager in a wheelchair, but," he shrugged, "the goddess works in mysterious ways." I took a breath. "Thornbrook burns in 3 days, during the next major celebration. A rival pack will attack, but they'll have help from inside, a traitor who'll open the gates." His expression didn't change, but I felt the shift in his energy. "Predator to hunter. You saw this?" "Last night, Luna Serafina, the first seer, she showed me." "Do you know who the traitor is?" "Not yet, but I will. I just need—" I stopped, uncertain how to ask. "You need me to believe you." His voice was soft. "You need me to give you credibility because no one in this pack listens to the crippled Omega." Heat flooded my cheeks. "Yes. Done." I blinked. "What? I believe you." He stood, offering his hand. "And I'll make sure your Alpha listens. But Sarah, you need to understand something. If you're wrong, if this vision is false, it's not. Then you'll have caused unnecessary panic. You'll have exposed yourself as a seer, and believe me, that's dangerous. There are people who would kill to control someone with your gifts. People who would lock you away and use you as a weapon. I know the risks. Do you?" He leaned close. "Because I'm one of those people, little Omega. If I thought I could use your visions to protect my territory, I'd take you north in chains and never let you leave. The threat should have terrified me. Instead, I felt strangely calm. But you won't, I said quietly. How do you know? Because you dream of me. Because some part of you recognizes me. Because... I met his golden eyes directly. Because you're not here to use me, Kale Blackthorn. You're here to help me, even if you don't fully understand why yet. For a long moment he was silent. Then he laughed, a real laugh, surprised and genuine. Gods, you really are a seer, aren't you? You see right through people. It's what I do. I allowed myself a small smile. Everyone thinks I'm just the sad girl in the corner, watching. They don't realize I'm watching them, learning them, seeing past their masks. Dangerous skill. Only if people knew I had it. He studied me with new intensity. Why me, Sarah? Why trust me with this? For all you know, I could be the darkness your Luna warned about. Are you? No, but you can't be sure of that. Actually, I can. I gestured to my head. Seer, remember? I've been watching you since you arrived. I see your intentions. You're not here to harm Thornbrook. You're here because you're trying to prevent something bigger than a single pack's destruction. His jaw clenched. The shamans see a war coming. Pack against pack, territory against territory. A darkness that will pit alpha against alpha until we've destroyed ourselves. And in every vision, the catalyst, the thing that starts it all, happens here. In Thornbrook. The attack. Yes. Somehow the attack on your pack is the first domino. Stop it, and we stop the war. Fail, and... He shook his head. We can't fail. Then we won't. I straightened in my chair. But I need your help. I need to identify the traitor before they can act. And I need access to people who won't talk to me normally. Because you're the crippled Omega everyone dismisses. Yes. I held his gaze. I need you to make me visible, Kyle. To force people to see me. Can you do that? His smile was slow and dangerous. Little Omega, I'm going to do more than make you visible. I'm going to make you unavoidable. Chapter 6, The Court of Masks. Kale's method of making me unavoidable was typically direct. He announced at dinner that night that I was to be his personal guide to Thornbrook's customs and territory. The reaction was immediate. My mother's face went white. My father's went red. Celeste looked like she'd been slapped. Alpha Blackthorn, my father said carefully. Surely there are better guides. Sarah is unwell. She rarely leaves the pack house. Perhaps Celeste could... I don't want Celeste. Kale's tone was flat, brooking no argument. I want Sarah. She has an observant eye and a sharp mind. Or are you saying your daughter is incompetent? Neat trap. Agree and insult me. Disagree and comply. My father's jaw worked. Of course not. If you wish for Sarah to be your guide, then so she shall be. Excellent, Kyle turned to me. Tomorrow morning, early. I want to see everything. Your borders, your defenses, your people. Everything. I nodded, not trusting my voice. Celeste's eyes were burning holes in my skull. After dinner, she cornered me in the hallway. What are you doing? What do you mean? Don't play innocent. The Northern Alpha. Why does he want you? You've done something, said something. I haven't done anything. Then why you? Her voice cracked, and I realized with surprise that she wasn't just angry. She was hurt. I'm the beautiful one. I'm the one alphas want. I'm supposed to be the one who catches an alpha's eye, who gets chosen for something special. Not you, never you. For a moment, I saw past her cruelty to the desperation beneath. Celeste had built her entire identity on being the desired one, the perfect Omega. My existence as the broken sister had always made her look better by comparison. But now an alpha, a powerful alpha, had chosen me over her. It was destroying her carefully constructed world. He doesn't want me like that, I said quietly. It's not romantic, Celeste. Then what is it? I couldn't tell her. Couldn't explain about the visions, the prophecies, the coming attack. I don't know, I lied. But it's temporary. He'll leave soon and everything will go back to normal. Will it? She stared at me, and for the first time in years, really looked at me. You've changed, Sarah. These past few months, you're different. More present. Like you've been sleeping for years and suddenly woke up. She was more perceptive than I'd given her credit for. Maybe I have, I said softly. She left without another word. I returned to my room to find Kyle waiting in my chair by the window. He'd entered without permission, made himself comfortable in my space like he had every right to be there. I should have been angry. Instead, I was amused. Breaking and entering is frowned upon in most packs, I said. I knocked. You weren't here. He gestured around my room, the books stacked everywhere, the notes I'd made about pack members and their relationships, the maps I'd drawn of the pack house layout. You're more prepared than I expected. I've had a lot of time to observe. I wheeled closer. Why are you really here, Alpha? Kyle. Just Kyle when we're alone. He picked up one of my notebooks, flipping through it. These are good. Detailed. You've mapped every relationship, every alliance, every grudge in this pack. It's what I do. Watch and map and understand. It's more than that. He set down the notebook. You see patterns. See the connections people don't realize they're making. That's why the shamans dreamed of you, Sarah. You're not just a seer of visions. You're a seer of truth, of reality beneath the surface. Is that what your shamans said? They said you'd be the one to unravel the web, to see the pattern connecting all the violence, all the coming war. He leaned forward. Can you do that? Can you see who's pulling the strings? I don't know yet, but I will. I met his eyes. Tomorrow, when you take me to see the borders, I need to observe the warriors, the ones who guard the gates. The traitor is someone with access, someone trusted enough that their betrayal won't be questioned. Warrior, then, or someone close to your alpha? Yes. That's a small pool, maybe 30 people. He stood, stretching. We'll observe them all tomorrow. Push them, test them, see who reacts wrong. They'll wonder why you're testing Thornbrook's warriors. Let them wonder. I'm a Northern Alpha. We're paranoid by nature. They'll chalk it up to my savage upbringing. His smile was sharp. Besides, I'll be focusing on you, not them. Let them think I'm courting you. Let them underestimate what we're really doing. Courting me? My voice came out higher than intended. You sound surprised. I'm in a wheelchair, Kale. Alphas don't court broken Omegas. You're not broken. His voice was suddenly fierce. You're different. There's a distinction. Is there? He crossed the room, crouching before my chair. This close, I could see the gold flecks in his eyes, the silver scars on his jaw. Your legs don't work, Sarah. So what? Your mind is sharper than any weapon I've ever carried. Your gift is rarer than any alpha bloodline. You see what others miss. You understand what others ignore. His hand came up, stopping just short of touching my face. The only thing broken about you is your pack's ability to recognize your value. My throat was tight. You don't know me. Don't I? I've been dreaming of you for 6 months, feeling you watch me in my sleep. Maybe I know you better than anyone in this pack ever has. He stood, heading for the window. Get some sleep, he said. Tomorrow we hunt a traitor. Then he was gone, disappearing into the night like smoke. I sat in the darkness, my heart hammering, my mind racing. For the first time in 11 years, someone had looked at me and seen not a disability, but a person. Not a burden, but a gift. It was terrifying. It was exhilarating. It was everything. Chapter 7. The Hunter's Moon morning came too early. Kale arrived at dawn with two of his pack members, Tessa, his scarred second, and a quiet male named Rook, who watched everything with Predator's eyes. Ready? Kyle asked. I'd dressed carefully, simple clothes, my hair braided back, my chair's wheels freshly oiled for silence. I'd also tucked a knife into my boot, small, easily concealed, probably useless given that I couldn't stand to fight. But it made me feel less vulnerable. "Ready," I confirmed. We started with the eastern border. The patrol there was led by Marcus Stone, a Beta warrior who'd been with Thornbrook for 20 years. Solid, reliable, loyal. Kyle questioned him extensively about patrol routes, defensive positions, response times. Marcus answered confidently, his body language open. "Not him," I murmured to Kale as we moved on. "How do you know?" "His micro-expressions. When you asked about weaknesses in the defense, he got uncomfortable, but it was protective discomfort. He doesn't like admitting vulnerabilities because he wants to fix them, not exploit them." Kale's eyes gleamed. "Teach me to read like you do. It took me 11 years of watching. Then give me the abbreviated version." So as we moved from border to border, I taught him how to read the tiny tells, the way someone's eyes shift when they lie, the tension in shoulders when they're hiding something, the false smile that doesn't reach the eyes. By midday, we'd cleared half the warriors. By afternoon, the list had narrowed to 5 possibles. But none felt right. None triggered the recognition I was waiting for. We returned to the pack house for the evening meal, and I realized something. Kale had made me unavoidable, yes. But he'd done more than that. He'd made people see me as his equal, his partner in whatever he was doing here. The looks I received now weren't pitying. They were speculative. Calculating. Celeste watched from across the dining hall, her expression unreadable. My mother looked worried. My father looked confused. And in the corner, speaking quietly with several warriors, was Elder Mira, the healer who'd dismissed my headaches as stress. She was watching me too, but her expression was different from the others. It was calculating, and underneath that calculation, fear. The pressure began behind my eyes. Vision. I barely had time to grip my chair's armrests before the world tilted. Elder Mira in darkness, speaking with shadows. The Northern Alpha suspects. The girl, the crippled one, she's more than she seems. They're asking too many questions. Can you silence her? A male voice, familiar but distorted. Easily. An overdose of sleeping draft. Natural causes. No one will question the death of a sick Omega. Do it tonight. The attack happens tomorrow. We can't risk exposure now. I slammed back, gasping. Kale was at my side instantly. What did you see? The healer. My voice was shaking. Elder Mira. She's the traitor. And she's planning to kill me tonight. Chapter 8. The Poison and the Proof. The hardest part wasn't believing me. Kale did that instantly. The hardest part was figuring out how to handle it without alerting Elder Mira that we knew. We retreated to my room. Kale brought Tessa and Rook. Together we planned. We need proof, Tessa said. An Alpha's word might sway your father, but solid evidence is better. The sleeping draft, I said. In my vision, she said she'd use it tonight. If we can catch her in the act, too risky. Kale's tone was flat. If anything goes wrong, you're dead. Then we set a trap. Rook spoke for the first time, his voice surprisingly soft. The Omega pretends to drink the drugged tea. Mira believes her dead or incapacitated. Then she'll make contact with her conspirators, probably to confirm the job is done. We follow. We document. We have our proof. It was dangerous. It was risky. It was our only option. I'll do it, I said. Sarah? I have to, Kyle. This is my pack. My family. I won't let them burn because I was too afraid to take a risk. He looked like he wanted to argue. Instead, he nodded. Fine, but I'm staying close. If anything goes wrong, nothing will go wrong. Famous last words. Evening came. Like clockwork, Elder Mira arrived with my evening tonic, the herbal tea she'd been bringing me for 3 years. supposedly to help with pain and sleep. How long had she been drugging me? How many nights had I slept too deeply, too completely, while she did God's know what? The thought made my skin crawl. "Drink up, dear," she said, her voice warm and grandmotherly. "You look exhausted. All this time with the Northern Alpha. I'm sure it's been taxing. Very taxing." I took the cup, letting my hand tremble slightly. "He asks so many questions about everything. It's overwhelming." "I'm sure." She patted my hand. "But you've done well. Your family is proud. Now rest. Tomorrow will be easier." She left. I counted to 10, then poured the tea into the plant by my window. "Sorry, plant. Hopefully whatever she put in here won't kill you too badly." Then I arranged myself in my chair, letting my head loll to the side, my breathing slow and deep. And I waited. Kyle was hidden in my closet, Tessa on the balcony, Rook in the hallway. An hour passed, then 2. Just when I thought maybe I'd been wrong, maybe the vision was false. The door opened. Elder Mira entered silently, moving to my chair. She checked my pulse, lifted my eyelid to check my pupil response. Satisfied I was unconscious, she withdrew a small vial from her pocket. Poison. Actual poison. She was going to kill me. Right here, right now, and make it look natural. My heart hammered, but I kept my breathing steady, my body limp. She tipped my head back, bringing the vial to my lips. Kale exploded from the closet. He moved like lightning, grabbing Mira's wrist, twisting until the vial fell. It shattered on the floor, dark liquid spreading across the wood. "I'd say I'm surprised," Kale said conversationally. "But I'm really not." Mira's face went white, then red. "Alpha Blackthorn, what is the meaning of..." "The meaning is you just tried to murder Sarah Whitlock." His voice was ice. "Question is, why?" She recovered quickly. I had to give her that. "Murder?" "I was bringing her medicine. She has episodes, you see. Seizures. The draft calms them." "Does it?" Kale gestured to the shattered vial. "Then you won't mind if we test it." Her expression flickered. "Or," Kale continued, "we could skip the theater, and you could simply tell me who you're working with. Because, Elder, I know you're not smart enough to plan an attack on your own pack. Someone's pulling your strings. I don't know what you..." "Stop!" My voice surprised even me. I sat up, letting my eyes clear. "I know you tried to poison me. I saw it, hours ago. That's why we set this trap." Mira's face went ashen. You saw?" "I'm a seer, Elder. Luna Serafina's heir. I've been having visions for 3 years, but you knew that, didn't you? That's why you kept telling me the headaches were stress. You were trying to convince me I was going mad. Trying to make me doubt my own gift." She backed toward the door, but Tessa stepped inside, blocking her escape. "Who are you working with?" I asked. "Who's planning to attack Thornbrook tomorrow?" "I won't. I can't." Her voice cracked. "They'll kill my son. They have my son. If I don't help them, if I don't open the gates when they attack..." "Who has your son?" Kale's tone softened slightly. "Ravenclaw Pack. They took him 6 months ago during a border skirmish. Said it was an accident, a misunderstanding. But then the letters started coming. Orders. Do this or he dies. Do that or we send you pieces." Tears streamed down her weathered face. "What choice did I have? He's my son. My only child." My anger deflated. She wasn't evil. She was desperate. "You had a choice," I said quietly. "You could have told Alpha Marcus. He would have helped. The pack would have helped. Instead, you betrayed all of us. And let my son die?" "Your son is already dead, Elder." Kale's voice was gentle, but firm. "Ravenclaw wouldn't keep him alive once they no longer need you. They're using your hope as a leash." Mira collapsed, sobbing. "Where were you supposed to open the gates?" I asked. "When?" "Tomorrow, midnight. The Eastern Gate, They said just get the gate open, then run. They promised they'd let me and my son go if I just opened the gate. They lied. Kale pulled out a communication crystal. Rare, expensive, but useful. Tessa, get Alpha Marcus. Tell him we need a pack meeting. Now, all warriors, all elders, everyone with authority. As Tessa left, I wheeled closer to Mira. I'm sorry about your son, I said, and I meant it. But Elder, what you were going to do? Letting Ravenclaw attack us? Children would have died. Families would have been destroyed. How many sons and daughters were you willing to sacrifice to save your own? She had no answer. Chapter 9. The Alpha's Choice. The pack meeting was chaos. Alpha Marcus was furious, not just at Mira's betrayal, but at being caught unaware, at having a threat in his own pack house that he'd missed. The warriors were divided. Some wanted Mira executed immediately. Others argued for mercy, citing her impossible situation. Kale stood silent through most of it, letting Thornbrook handle its own business. But when Alpha Marcus turned to him, asking his opinion, Kale's response was measured. This isn't just about Thornbrook anymore. Ravenclaw's making moves, using hostages to manipulate pack members. This suggests coordination, planning, something bigger. He looked at me. Sarah, what do you see? All eyes turned to me, the crippled Omega in the corner, the one they'd dismissed, pitied, ignored. Now, suddenly, I was the center of attention. I took a breath. This attack isn't random. It's designed to look like a standard pack raid. Theft, maybe some violence, a message to stay off their territory. But it's more than that. Ravenclaw wants Thornbrook destabilized, wants us weak and divided. The question is, why? Resources, someone suggested. No, we're not rich enough to be worth this kind of effort. I wheeled forward, pulling out the maps I'd drawn. But we're positioned perfectly. Our territory sits between the Northern Lands and the Eastern Territories. We're a buffer zone. If you wanted to move troops or resources between those territories without being noticed, you'd need Thornbrook out of the way, Alpha Marcus finished. His face had gone grim. This is preparation for war. Yes, Kale's tone was dark. My shamans saw it months ago. A great war coming, pack against pack, territory against territory. Somehow it all starts here, with Thornbrook. So what do we do? My father's voice. He'd been silent until now, but his eyes were on me, really seeing me for perhaps the first time in years. Sarah, you saw this coming. What do we do? What did we do? I closed my eyes, reaching for that place of stillness. The place where visions came. The place where I could see. The pressure built behind my eyes. And this time I didn't fight it. Thornbrook, but different. Stronger. Allied. Warriors from different packs fighting together. United against a common threat. And at the center, me. Not in my chair. Standing. No, floating. Glowing with silver light. My voice carrying across the battlefield. Together. The vision shifted, Ravenclaw attacking as planned. But instead of surprise, they found an ambush. Thornbrook and Northern Territory side by side, the attackers routed, the conspiracy exposed, and in the aftermath, peace talks, alliance, the beginning of something new. I opened my eyes. We let them attack, I said. Silence. Absolutely not. Alpha Marcus's voice was sharp. I won't risk. We don't let them attack blind, I clarified. We prepare. We warn the pack, evacuate the non-combatants, position warriors at key points. Then we let Ravenclaw think their plan worked. Let them commit fully. And when they do, I looked at Kale. We crush them with overwhelming force, Thornbrook and Northern Territory, together. Kale smiled slowly. An alliance. More than that, a message. I turned to address the whole room. The old ways are dying. Pack against pack, territory against territory. It doesn't work anymore. We're too connected now, too interdependent. One pack's fall starts a cascade, but if we stand together, if we prove that alliance is possible, we prevent the war your shamans foresaw, Alpha Marcus finished. He looked at Kael. You'd commit your warriors to defending Thornbrook? Risk your people for ours? I would, because tomorrow you'll do the same for us when the threat moves north. That's what alliance means. Kael extended his hand. What do you say, Alpha? Ready to make history? My father stared at the offered hand for a long moment. Then he clasped it. For Thornbrook. For the future. The room erupted in cheers. Chapter 10. The Battle of Thornbrook. They came at midnight, as promised. 50 Ravenclaw warriors, armed and confident. They expected the eastern gate to be open, the pack to be asleep, resistance to be minimal. Instead, they found hell. The gate was indeed open, bait in the trap. But beyond it in the shadows, Thornbrook and Northern Territory warriors waited in perfect formation. When Ravenclaw committed, pouring through the gate, Kael gave the signal. The trap snapped shut. I watched from the highest window in the pack house, my enhanced sight letting me see the battlefield even in darkness. I couldn't fight, would never be able to fight physically. But I could do something else. I closed my eyes and reached out with my gift. Not to see the future, but to see the present. To understand the flow of battle, the positions of fighters, the moments of danger before they happened. And I spoke. Kael wore a communication crystal. Through it, I could guide him. Three coming from your left. Rook is overextended. Pull him back. Tessa needs support on the eastern flank. There's an archer in the tree, 40 yards north, 30 feet up. I became their eyes, their tactical coordinator, their seer. The battle lasted an hour. When it ended, Ravenclaw had lost half their force. The rest surrendered. And Thornbrook had suffered only minor injuries. Victory, complete and total. I found Kael in the aftermath, covered in blood and grinning like a feral thing. That was incredible, he said. You were incredible. Do you know what you did, Sarah? You saved dozens of lives, maybe more. Your guidance? Gods, it was like having a tactical genius in my head. I just saw what was needed. You did more than that. He crouched before my chair, his eyes intense. You proved that a seer isn't just someone who has visions. You're a force multiplier. A weapon unlike any other. I'm not a weapon. No, you're so much more. He took my hand. Come north with me. Join my pack. Be my seer officially. Help me prevent the war that's coming. My heart stuttered. You're asking me to leave Thornbrook? My family? I'm asking you to embrace what you are, to stop hiding in corners, to step into your power. His thumb brushed across my knuckles. But more than that, Sarah, I'm asking because in 6 months of dreaming about you, of feeling you watch me, of knowing you existed somewhere in the world, I've come to care about you, not as a seer, as a person, as someone I want to know, to understand, to... He stopped, seeming to realize what he was saying. To what? I whispered. To keep safe, to stand beside, to... He laughed, a frustrated sound. Hell, I don't know. I'm an alpha. We're not good with words. I just know that when I think about leaving here without you, something in me rebels. Strongly. Kael, you don't have to answer now. Think about it. But Sarah, wherever you end up, whatever you choose, know that you're not the crippled Omega everyone mocks. You're the seer who saved a pack, who prevented a war, who proved that strength comes in many forms. He stood, heading for the door. Kael. My voice stopped him. Thank you. For seeing me. Really seeing me. His smile was soft. How could I not? You've been watching me for months. Seemed only fair I finally look back. Chapter 11. The Luna's Decree. That night Luna Serafina came to me one final time. "You've done well, my heir," she said, her white eyes glowing with approval. "You've proven your worth, saved your pack, forged an alliance that will ripple through history." "What happens now?" I asked. "Now you choose. Stay with Thornbrook. Continue as you were, watched but not valued, useful but not celebrated. Or," she gestured and an image appeared, "the Northern Territory, wild and beautiful. Go north. Learn from Kale's shamans. Develop your gifts fully. Become not just a seer, but the seer. The one who guides, who counsels, who prevents disasters before they begin. And if I go north, Thornbrook will miss you. Your family will realize too late what they had. But you will grow into something magnificent, something powerful, something needed. But I can't walk, I can't fight. How can I be powerful? Child." Her voice was infinitely gentle. "You've been powerful all along. Your wheelchair isn't a limitation. It's your throne. From it, you see. From it, you guide. From it, you change the world. Not through strength of body, but through strength of vision. What if I fail? What if?" "You won't. Because you've already learned the most important lesson. That true sight comes not from eyes, but from understanding. From empathy. From the willingness to look past surfaces to truth beneath." She began to fade. "Whatever you choose, Sarah Whitlock, know that you carry my legacy. The legacy of seers who changed the world not with violence, but with vision." She disappeared. I sat in the darkness, thinking. Chapter 12, The Seer's Choice. Morning came with surprising clarity. I found my parents in the breakfast room. Celeste was there too, unusually quiet. "I'm going north," I said without preamble. "With Kale and his pack." My mother's cup clattered against its saucer. "What?" "Alpha Blackthorn has offered me a position as his seer. I'm accepting." "Sarah, you can't, you're not..." My father struggled for words. "You're our daughter. Your place is here." "Is it?" I looked at him directly. "Father, when was the last time you asked for my opinion on anything important? When was the last time you saw me as anything other than the damaged daughter who needed to be hidden away?" "That's not... We never..." "You did. All of you did." I turned to Celeste. "You told me I made people uncomfortable, that I should stay out of sight." "Well, I'm done staying out of sight. I'm done being the girl in the corner that everyone ignores." "But you're crippled," my mother said, then winced at her own words. "I don't mean... I just mean, how will you manage? Who will take care of you?" "I'll take care of myself. I've been doing it for years anyway." I softened slightly. "I know you love me. In your way. But I've outgrown this place. I've outgrown being defined by what I can't do instead of what I can." My father was quiet for a long moment. Then, "What can you do, Sarah?" "Really, I want to understand." So I told them. About the visions. About Luna Serafina. About the gift I'd been hiding for 3 years. About how I'd saved the pack, identified the traitor, guided the battle. When I finished, they stared at me like I was a stranger. "All this time," my mother whispered, "you could do all this, and we never knew. You never asked, never looked." I wasn't angry anymore, just tired. "You saw the wheelchair and decided that was all I was. But I'm so much more. I see that now." My father's voice was rough. "And I'm sorry, for not seeing it sooner, for not..." He stopped, emotion thick in his throat. "I'm proud of you, Sarah. I should have said that years ago. I'm saying it now." Tears pricked my eyes. "Thank you." Celeste stood abruptly, leaving the room. I found her later on the balcony, staring at the mountains. "You're really going," she said. "Yes, because of him? The Alpha? Because of me. Because I need to become who I'm meant to be. Kyle is just a catalyst." I paused. "I'm sorry if it feels like I'm abandoning you." "Are you?" She turned and her eyes were red. "I've been horrible to you, Sarah. For years, I've made you feel small because it made me feel big, and you're still apologizing to me. You're my sister. I've been a terrible sister. She wiped her eyes. But you're going to be amazing. I can see it. You're going to be the seer everyone talks about, everyone needs. And I... Her voice cracked. I'm going to stay here being the pretty one, the one everyone forgets about once they leave the room. That's not true. It is, but that's okay. Maybe it's time I figured out who I am beyond pretty. She hugged me suddenly, fiercely. Be safe, be happy, be everything you're meant to be. I will, I promised. Chapter 13, the Northern Territory we left at dawn 3 days later. The Northern Pack moved like a single organism, efficient, coordinated, deadly, and at its center, Kyle, who commanded with a word, a gesture, a look, and beside him, me, in my wheelchair, his seer. The journey north took 2 weeks. During that time, I learned about my new pack, about the shamans who'd dreamed of me, about the Northern Territory's brutal beauty. I also learned about Kyle. He'd lost his parents young, killed in a territorial dispute, had taken over as Alpha at 15, had spent the last decade building his pack into something formidable, something respected. Why did you really come south? I asked one night around the campfire. The shaman's visions, yes. But there's more. He was quiet for a long moment. I was lonely, he said finally. Leading is lonely. Everyone fears you, respects you, needs you. But no one sees you. Then I started dreaming of you, of someone who saw everything, who looked past surfaces to truth. And I thought... He shook his head. I thought maybe if I found you, I wouldn't be so alone anymore. Are you? Still lonely? He looked at me, firelight dancing in his golden eyes. No, not anymore. Something passed between us. Understanding. Recognition. The beginning of something that wasn't quite friendship, not yet love, but could become both. When we reached the Northern Territory, the pack greeted us with cautious curiosity. An Omega in a wheelchair, brought by their Alpha as his seer. It was unprecedented. The shamans, though, understood immediately. The eldest, a woman named Grandmother Mora, took one look at me and smiled. So, you're the one. The silver-eyed girl from our dreams. Yes, Grandmother. Good. We have much work to do. The war is still coming, child. We've only delayed it, not prevented it. There will be more attacks, more manipulation, more attempts to pit pack against pack. Then we'll stop them all. Her smile widened. Such confidence. I like you, child. Come, let me teach you what it truly means to be a seer. Chapter 14. The Seer's Ascension. The training was brutal, not physically. I'd accepted long ago that my body would never be my strength. But mentally, spiritually, the shamans pushed me to my absolute limits. I learned to extend my sight. To see not just visions, but possibilities. Futures that could be, pasts that were, presents that existed in shadows. I learned to touch minds without being felt. To guide without being noticed. To understand truths that people hid even from themselves. I learned to use my gift not as a weapon, but as a tool. For healing. For understanding. For bringing peace. And slowly, painfully, I learned to accept what I was. Not broken. Not limited. Not less. Different. Powerful. Necessary. 6 months after arriving in the Northern Territory, I had my first true prophetic vision. Not shown by Luna Serafina, but originating from my own gift. 5 packs, sitting at a table, arguing, negotiating, finally agreeing. An alliance, a council, a new way forward. And at the head of the table, facilitating the discussion, me. When I came out of the vision, Kyle was there. He'd learned to sense when I was seeing, learned to wait patiently until I returned. What did you see? He asked. Peace. Real peace. Not just absence of war, but genuine alliance. 5 packs, working together. How? I don't know yet, but I will. I smiled. That's what seers do. We see the destination. Then we figure out how to get there. He crouched before my chair, his expression serious. Sarah, there's something I need to say, and I need you to hear it without your sight, without analyzing my intentions. Just hear me. I'm listening. I love you. The words were simple, direct, utterly sincere. Not because you're my seer, not because you're useful or powerful or necessary. I love you because you're you. Because you make me laugh. Because you call me on my bullshit. Because when I'm with you, I'm not just an alpha. I'm just Kale. My breath caught. You don't have to say anything back, he continued. I know you're still figuring things out, still growing into your power. I just needed you to know. Because life is short and uncertain, and I've learned not to leave important things unsaid. I reached out, touching his face. I love you, too. I think I started falling the moment you asked why I was watching you, because you weren't afraid of my sight. You were curious. You saw it as a gift, not a curse. He turned his head, pressing a kiss to my palm. So, where does that leave us? Together, I said simply. Wherever this path leads, we walk it together. Even though I'm an overbearing alpha who barks orders? Even though. I'll just have to train you better. He laughed. God has helped me. I've fallen in love with someone who can see all my secrets. Not all of them, just most. That's not reassuring, I smiled. Good. You shouldn't be too comfortable. Comfort breeds complacency. Is that seer wisdom? No, that's just common sense. He kissed me then, and it was perfect. Not because it was dramatic or passionate or world-ending, but because it was real, because it was chosen, because it was two people who saw each other, truly saw each other, and decided that was enough, more than enough, everything. Chapter 15, The Council of 5. It took another year to make the vision real. A year of traveling between packs, of quiet negotiations, of using my sight to find common ground, to expose threats, to build trust. A year of proving that peace was possible. And finally, the day came. The first Council of 5. Thornbrook, Northern Territory, Ravenclaw, under new leadership after we'd exposed their old Alpha's conspiracy. Silverpine, and Moonwater. 5 packs, sitting at a table in neutral territory. I facilitated the discussion from my wheelchair at the head of the table, Kale at my side. The arguments were fierce. The wounds between packs ran deep. There were moments I thought it would fall apart, that old hatreds would prove stronger than new hopes. But I'd seen this moment, seen it succeed. So I guided them. Not with visions. I'd learned that seeing the future could become a crutch, something that prevented people from choosing their own paths. Instead, I guided them with questions, with gentle redirections, with the simple act of making them truly hear each other. And slowly, painfully, miraculously, they agreed. The Council of 5 became reality, a permanent alliance, a pledge to support each other, defend each other, grow together rather than tear each other apart. It wasn't perfect. It wouldn't solve everything. But it was a beginning. Epilogue. The Seer's Throne, 5 years later. I'm 22 now, 22 years old and the most respected seer in 5 territories. I still use a wheelchair. My legs still don't work. I still can't shift, can't fight, can't do 100 things that normal wolves take for granted. But I can see. And in a world growing more complex, more interconnected, more desperately in need of wisdom, that matters. The Council of 5 has expanded to the Council of 12. Packs that once would have killed each other now trade, intermarry, cooperate. It's not perfect. There are still conflicts, still disagreements, still moments when violence seems inevitable. But there's also hope. real hope. The kind that comes from choosing peace over and over again, even when war would be easier. Kale and I married 2 years ago, a quiet ceremony attended by shamans and family. He leads the Northern Territory with strength and wisdom. I counsel, guide, and see. We balance each other, and at night, when the visions are quiet and the world is still, he holds me and reminds me that I'm not just a seer. I'm Sarah, his mate, his love, his partner. The girl who was once mocked for her weakness became the woman they call the Silver-Eyed Prophet, the Luna's seer, the one who sees truth. But you know what the best part is? I did it without changing who I fundamentally was. I didn't need to walk to be powerful. Didn't need to conform to anyone's idea of what an Omega should be. I just needed to accept my gifts, own my truth, and refuse to be defined by what I couldn't do instead of what I could. Luna Serafina was right all those years ago. My wheelchair isn't a prison. It's my throne. From it, I see. From it, I guide. From it, I've changed the world. Not through strength of body, but through strength of vision. And you know what? That's more than enough. It's everything. The end.